Bears Robert Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
And Office 365. And Office 365. And Office 365.
Welcome back to another Need to Know podcast. Once again, I'm joined by my fellow co-host over there on the other side of the internet and Skype, Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
We're in the same city, so I wouldn't say it's all the way over there. Hello, Rob. How are you?
It could go all the way around the internet. You're on the fast links, not between us and the slow links. You never know.
Well, you never know. Different ISPs route different directions. Episode 115 is what we are.
My God, how many episodes is that? That's so many. Geez, I'm feeling old. What about you? You've been here for a while now. You're almost part of the furniture.
Yep. Guess growing your gut, sitting down too much, not getting enough exercise. So,
well, guess what? I'm going to put you straight to work. Let's fill the people, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, in on some news from Ignite. So what have you got for us to kick us off?
Oh, well, the first article is Ignite happened in the US just this week gone, the last week of September. So it depends on when you're listening to the podcast, but last week of September in the US in Atlanta, Georgia, Ignite was on and it was huge. All the big names were there, Mark Rusinovich, Jeffrey Snover, all the Channel 9 MSDN people were there, Rick Claus, Joey Snow.
I saw you walking around the exhibit floor, flaunting yourself.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was a Beam robot thingy, which you've probably seen before. I've seen them at events before. They've been around for a few years. It's an automated robot which you drive on your computer. It's a special software that you install and your mouse, and you drag it around. You can crank it up to go really, really fast and put it in party mode. So when you're talking, it comes out really, really loud. And in fact, there was a video of Corey Sanders and Rick Claus that recorded a Tuesdays with Corey at the event, and Corey was driving one. And if you check it out on the last Tuesdays with Corey on Channel 9 MSDN or on YouTube, you'll see what I mean. Like you hear Corey talking through the robot and his voice is quite loud. It's quite funny because obviously he was there in Atlanta, but he had a poster, like a photo in the background of Tahiti with the water and the beautiful palm trees, and he's saying, "I'm calling from Tahiti." So he's just basically having a joke, but it was quite funny. But yeah, they're pretty cool. They're very addictive. But the thing is, though, because you don't have any peripheral vision when you're driving these things, which you do normally, right? So you can't just look around left and right. So you're driving along, and people tend to get out of your way because as people are walking towards you, they see you as like a robot. They understand that, okay, the robot's not as agile as you, and their subconscious will automatically just walk out of the way. So that's good. But the problem is you get lost quite easily. So it's interesting. So they have a dock which you're meant to take them back to, but it's interesting because I got to the point where I had enough. It was an hour, and I just didn't know where to go, so I just left it on the side somewhere. The batteries last for about 6 hours. So, yeah, no, they're pretty cool. They're a big hit, I reckon, at Ignite.
Well, I think it's one of the big things, I think, to take away from Ignite that I certainly find most impressive is the fact that effectively all the content, is pretty much streamed immediately or is available after the fact. You've got, you know, the show walking robots where you can interact with it. So it's a bit of a question, as much as you get from the show by actually going to it and networking and doing all that sort of stuff and being there in the live audience, I mean, there's so much value that you can get by attending the show virtually and obviously following it after the fact. So I'm still working through a lot of the videos as well and see that's going to take a while to get through. But considering even a few years ago, this really wasn't possible. And look how quickly that Microsoft does produce the content, does get the content out there for everybody to see. It's pretty impressive when you think about how, you know, they ran for a week, you think of all the sessions they've had, and they're making all that content available so quickly to their worldwide audience. It really is, you know, something they should be given full kudos for, to really get people involved with their technology.
Well, the other thing as well is, I reckon, is pretty cool, is the fact that, yes, Microsoft is jumping on this whole open source bandwagon and supporting other things, and they're loving lots and lots of people. But with the content, they're not only pushing it out on their own website, myignite.microsoft.com or Channel 9 MSDN, that website, they're also pushing it out to YouTube. And they've also got a Microsoft Ignite channel on YouTube. And you know what? YouTube, in my opinion, works so much better across all your devices. And if you've got a YouTube Red subscription, you don't have any ads. It remembers where you left off. It remembers your history. You can create all these playlists. It's actually, there's more advantages to that. And the fact that it just works, there's a lot of times that I'm sort of watching a video through Channel 9 MSDN, for example, on a phone or on the computer, and it's just like, hit play, and it just sits there. It doesn't play. No problems with YouTube. And Microsoft's embraced that. And you're right, Rob, because while last week I was sort of getting up every morning early in the morning and opening up YouTube, and you'd see a whole bunch of videos there on the Microsoft Ignite channel, which were only like a day old. So somebody there is actively uploading them to YouTube, as well as their own as well, just any channel possible to get the content out there.
I think the good thing I like is being able to obviously watch it on a PC, like I said, watch it on a laptop, but thanks to the app that's on the Xbox, you can watch that via the YouTube app on your TV as well, which means, again, it's much easier just to, you know, sit back in the beanbag and catch up on some information. I also like the ability with YouTube that you can obviously watch it at an accelerated rate. So, I mean, there's so much content to get through. I find myself, you know, pumping it up to 1.5 times speed and being able to get through so much more, which I think a lot of people do listen to these sort of podcasts at much higher speed. Again, it gives you that advantage. So, but again, I think the core of it is the way that Microsoft's able to really organize their events and record it and capture the video, and obviously the different changing screens, and then, like I said, produce it and optimize it and then get it up there on multiple channels is very, very impressive. And I would certainly, and we'll put the links in the show notes, but we'd certainly encourage people to go through and work through the content, because it's really almost as good as being at the event. Like I said, you miss out on some of that networking, but thanks to your robot friend there, that you can do a lot of that as well. But like I said, it really shows the power of technology. And I think, again, all kudos to Microsoft for really making that investment, because it must be a fair cost to obviously get all that stuff up there, produce it, record it,
yes,
run the event. It's just amazing.
I saw a video patch and switch with Joey Snow and Rick Claus just before the event started. It was a day before they were there on the Sunday, walking through the massive hall, which was a two-sided information brochure for everything was, and it's literally huge. And as they were coming down the escalator, all the cargo timber boxes were there with Microsoft printed on the side of them. It was phenomenal. The amount of kit they had, the amount of infrastructure they had, the setup, all the demos they had, it was just massive. It's just trying to comprehend the amount of bloody infrastructure and IT and the servers they had, and somebody had to hook it all up and get it to work. And it was just, it went off without a hitch.
One of the things that I found most interesting, I've been to one of the big SharePoint conferences a few years ago. I mean, that's, you know, the Ignite's even bigger than that. But the pure logistics of just feeding people, you know, getting them all in for lunch, getting them all out for lunch, getting them afternoon, you know, coffee and tea and all that sort of stuff, and moving them between sessions. I mean, that size of show is just hugely impressive. And again, to make all those resources available, again, you know, not many people apart from Microsoft could do that. So again, all kudos to them for doing that, making that available to everybody who wants it for free, to keep up to date with it, work through that content. And again, it's available on a number of different channels, but we probably need to share some news with people and get them up to date with some of the stuff that has happened. What about on the Azure side, Mark? Why don't you kick us off with some news?
I'll just quickly add to the other bit too. Is there's an MVP that one of you guys, Rob, an MVP which has put together a script. You can actually run it. It's free and download it off the internet.
A bulk download
of not only Ignite that happened just recently, but every other Microsoft event that's happened in the past. It's pretty cool. We'll put the details in the show notes. I've made a note here. I will not forget. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and we'll take it from there. But also, too, I will just add to YouTube, the other advantage to that, having the videos on there, is if you're watching it on pretty much any device, YouTube has the volume normalization, so you don't have the problem where you're trying to listen to a video and it's hard to hear the audio. News. Right. So there's quite a few announcements. Lots. In fact, Azure DNS was one of the biggest announcements. So Route 56, which has been out for quite some time in AWS, which is a competition, Route 56 is called that because of the reason is DNS is on port 56. And a lot of other people in the market, especially the Microsoft partners, were using that as an only service in AWS with everything else on Azure, because Azure didn't have a DNS server, but now they do. So it's GA'd, it's out now, it supports pretty much everything that normal DNS servers does with a 99.99% availability SLA. That's pretty huge. Other things were the active virtual private network VPN gateway. So again, to bring them up to speed with AWS, who I believe offered something similar, like an active VPN gateway. Azure never had one, but now they do. You can run it active, active-passive, however you want. But the good news is there's two endpoints, and you can have it connected to two endpoints on premises. So in case one goes down, then you're not going to lose access to Azure, which will be great for hybrid. The other thing is the Ultra Performance Express Route Gateway. This one is quite huge as well, because originally they had a limit. The High Performance Express Route Gateway, which is a previous family, was much lower. I think it was 200 megabit, I think, by memory. But this one is much faster. It's five times quicker than the original one. It offers more capabilities, bigger bandwidth, bigger pipe, everything else. It's got the normal SLA behind it as well. So that's out now if you're using Express Route. The other big news, IPv6. Rob, this one, I thought of you when I was looking at this one, because IPv6 is especially sort of focused on IoT devices. Now, I remember that you were telling the story how the apocalypse is coming, how this salt and pepper shaker has an IP address, and this sugar packet has an IP address, and pretty much everything has an IP address, or will do at some stage in the future, now that IPv6 is out and IoT is in Azure. This is what's going to happen. Is that right, Rob? Something about the apocalypse?
Yep, so they're going to jump off the dining room table and they're going to strangle you, that's for sure. I'll be able to control them remotely and make sure that you're the first one in the queue if need be. So I'm taking preferences for people right now. So send me an email, director@ciaops.com. Nominate the person you want the IoT device and the drones to take out. I'm happy to assist in that.
It'll be great. Drones delivering Domino's pizza to people, and drones picking up, dropping off parcels. I think Amazon's testing something like that now, where the drone, you put a flag in the backyard.
They've worked really well with Hellfire missiles, so I can't see how delivering pizzas wouldn't be a success either.
Except it'll catch a few flies along the way, or a few mosquitoes or moths or whatever, but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, IPv6 is out with Azure. The other one is VNet peering. Now, the VNet peering was in public preview and preview before for a little while. In fact, I'm surprised that it's come out so quick. But it's not actually that big of a service, because it just joins two VNets together, not three or four. It's only two VNets in the same region. They can be a cross subscription. And it's quite straightforward. Like it literally removes like any firewalls. You've got two VNets across subscriptions, for example. You push put peering together, and both of them can talk to each other quite nicely. which means if one of them had like a VPN gateway, for example, with an ExpressRoute connection, the other VNet, which is peered to it, could make use of that that ExpressRoute gateway or the VPN tunnel, for example. Azure Network Improvements is another one. So there was a couple of announcements in relation to this. So they're pushing. They've basically doing something new for the public cloud. So they're the first in this area. So no one else is sort of doing this, where they're offering a service called NVGRE. They're offloading network processing to the hardware itself. So rather than going through the virtualization layer, it goes direct to the hardware. It's a performance increase of about 33% to about 50%. So that's pretty cool. That's coming out. And there's also a public preview, which is similar to that, of accelerated networking, which provides up to 25 gigabits per second of throughput and a latency of up to 10... it dramatically reduces latency and up to 10 times the speed. And also applications are going to be benefiting as well. But yeah, there's a couple of announcements in relation to the performance for the virtual machines in Azure. So that's definitely... one up on the competition, because even with Windows Weekly, I think Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they were also talking about it as well. It's definitely big news for them.
Yep, excellent. Anything else on the Azure front?
H-series of virtual machines, which have come out, which are just another series. I mean, they're just running like RDMA networks and different sort of memory SKUs and different... storage and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's just another family of virtual machines. We had the F series come out just recently, and the N series. So yeah, the H series are coming out. So that's pretty much it. They're the main things anyway. There's other news stories. I mean, actually, there is another one which I'll let you cover, is the SharePoint document libraries can now be synced again. Hooray.
Well, what they announced was that there is a new preview sync client, as we expected, for OneDrive for Business. So the OneDrive for Business sync client has been improved, enhanced, as we expected. But again, it has also now been extended to provide the ability to synchronize document libraries in SharePoint. So at the moment, it's in preview. There's a little bit of work to get it going, and we expect the general release to probably be around November. But from what I've seen, the sessions that I've watched at Ignite, it's very, very positive. I think that I get the feeling that OneDrive for Business has turned the corner. It's going to become the premier syncing tool and will do what a lot of people want, although I'm very much generally against syncing massive amounts of data. From what I see, the selective sync and the improvements that they've made, also the flexibility in the mobile client as well, I think it's all very, very good and very, very positive. So certainly testing that out now, looking to expand it, but I can't find much fault with it. And we expect to see it continue to improve down the track. So now we can synchronize our document libraries in a SharePoint team site as well as our OneDrive for Business, which is a fantastic improvement. It's really going to put the cat amongst the pigeons with some of the other competitors out there.
So with that, I've got a question. So I installed it just last week. I've got two dark blue OneDrive for Business clients. So one of them is the OneDrive for Business. The other one is the SharePoint document libraries. And then I've got a white one, which is consumer OneDrive. I've got three in total now.
Okay, well then at the end of the day, you should only have one. So they're moving towards a single synchronization client that will replace all of those with the most current one. And remember, the current one's in preview. Again, that's probably why you may still have three, but the recommendation is generally to remove all the others and only run with the preview one to test it to make sure. So at the end of the day, we should end up with a single client that will do our OneDrive consumer, our OneDrive for Business, as well as our SharePoint document libraries.
Is there any news on when they're looking at releasing sort of a full version or the whole thing, the GA, I guess, or the...
November.
November? Oh, cool. So it's not too far away.
Not at all.
Well, it's working. I mean, look, it's synchronizing the SharePoint document library. I've got all my stuff. I haven't had any issues with it. So, yeah, No, it's good.
Yeah, same result here. I think that, like I said, a lot of people unfortunately were burnt early on with, you know, some of the issues that OneDrive Sync Client had because it wasn't expected to synchronize. It wasn't designed to synchronize as much data as people started using. They went back and rewrote it from scratch, focused on OneDrive first, then moved it to the SharePoint, which they've done now. The major issue was around getting permissions correct. So the example is if you have a document library, you have multiple people accessing it. One document in that document library, for example, is read-only for one user. How do you protect that if users are synchronizing all that information to their desktop? So that's the sort of thing and the challenges that the OneDrive team have needed to solve with this new syncing client. And they're moving closer, obviously, to be able to provide that. Plus, they're adding some really new and cool features to the web as well as to the syncing client as well. So again, if you haven't visited in a while, have a look at the preview. But remember, it is in preview, but we're expecting the completion of the client hopefully towards the end of October and early November at this stage.
Excellent.
One of the other things that is changing the Office 365 world is the new app launcher. So our little waffle in the top left-hand corner is also changing to be more like Windows 10. So this means that we can now start attaching additional applications, third-party applications, quickly and easy, allowing a user to easily customize the look and the feel of their Office 365 start button, I suppose you can call it. So yep. Very interesting that Microsoft's going that way. Another interesting one was that I found is a public preview of the Microsoft Staff Hub. Okay, so the Staff Hub is aimed at kiosk workers, so Office 365 licenses that have kiosk licenses only. So it allows the manager to work with those, manage those for people who won't have anything on their desktop. Another one, we're seeing some major improvements around Outlook. I think some of this comes from Microsoft's purchase of the Sunrise product, which they eventually closed down, but took much of the technology.
Not the Channel 7, not the Channel 7 program in the mornings.
There's too much plastic, I think, in that situation. Microsoft wouldn't necessarily wanting to take that. We're also seeing improvements to the SharePoint side of things. So we're seeing the pages in SharePoint now being much easier to edit, the widgets. We're seeing the continuation of the SharePoint look and feel makeover. So that should hopefully be complete by the end of this calendar year, which means SharePoint team sites, groups, and also Planner are going to look very similar. And again, really be focused on collaboration, have a new look and feel, be mobile responsive, all that sort of stuff. So that development of SharePoint marches along, which Microsoft is calling their intelligent intranet. I think that's really good. They've also released an Android app for the SharePoint team sites. You can now get to your SharePoint team sites on iOS and now on Android as well, correct?
That's good.
And again, we're seeing what I also thought was very interesting around some of the keynote presentations was this concept of how important or how, how to the fore machine learning is becoming. So we're beginning to see more and more intelligent bots and the ability to automate commands being rolled into Office 365. So we see that now with things like Flow and Power Apps. And that continues to improve. So we've seen Skype bots coming in, so the Skype consumer bots, but we expect to see that also in the business side of things to provide a whole lot of automation. So, very, very interesting.
Well, we're going to be talking to somebody in relation to that at some stage in one of our near future podcasts in relation to Logic Apps and all that sort of business sort of type of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that the reason is that it's such an important topic and it's becoming very much the focus, and there's a lot of automation that can be done inside many businesses to save time and money and also make things, far more consistent throughout an organization. So it's a big thing, as you know, being the PowerShell whiz that you are. That's the whole idea, to be able to automate the IT management typically, but imagine if we can roll that out so that customers can start automating a lot of their own processes. It's going to save a huge amount of time and effort, and again, some very, very interesting applications can be built on top of that. So one of the other things they seem to be plugging, they're working towards, is the dynamic CRM, which is the integration with Office 365 and the accounts and all of that under one umbrella from Microsoft. So again, plenty of information there, and encourage people to start having a look. We expect to see Dynamics 365 here in Australia probably around June 2017, but we'd expect to see a preview well before that if people want to have a play with that. So again, lots and lots and lots of updates. We'll give you more as I work through all the Ignite sessions, but I think we'll be pretty good for news for a little while now with all the stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, it'll be a constant stream coming out from now on. Also, too, I'll just throw into the portal for Azure, the new Ibiza portal. A few subtle changes that came out on the Sunday just before Ignite started. And one of the major differences when you click in the portal and you go to browse, so browse all your resources, they've grouped them all, which is quite nice. Because before it was all over the place. So now it's grouped by, you know, like compute, database, data, and all that sort of stuff. Go on.
The other thing I was going to say is after our recent interview with Jeffrey Snover, I've had started playing with the OMS console, starting to link it up to some services and servers. It now has the ability to link to Office 365 and also start pulling out the logs out of Office 365, out of your machines. So if you haven't done that, I'd certainly, again, there's a free tier. So you go to oms.microsoft.com, sign in. You can link it to your Azure account, and then you can start linking it to your on-premises machines using an agent, but also Office 365 and other SaaS services. Again, the big thing is there's a free tier that you can certainly start using. There's a very cheap entry tier. I think it's about $10 a month or something off your Azure credits, and then there's a per node, which is the commercial version. But if you haven't started playing with OMS, I'm certainly very impressed by what I see. I think it provides a great overview, and it may be an indication even for the smaller businesses to be able to put on machines to get some sort of reporting and look at events and malware protection, that sort of stuff. So if you haven't started doing that, I certainly recommend.
It's free though. There's a free tier up to 500 megabytes.
Correct. And then there's a very basic tier, I think, for $10 a month, which gives you more storage, up to 1 terabyte, I think, if memory serves me correct. And then there's a per node cost for basically the full commercial version. So you can get the basic for 500 megs. And then if you want a little bit more space, you can, you know, pay $10 a month off your Azure subscription. And then if you want the full commercial, full-blown product, then it's a per node cost.
It's pretty cool. They've got the security and audit solution in there, which you can pretty much deploy and have it monitoring or looking at your whole entire environment within seconds, literally. And it is true multi-cloud. I had to laugh because the AWS version that they've got, that they came out with, it's like it's only AWS only. I thought, yeah, why bother? I mean, but this one, it is actually true. It's multi-public cloud and also on-prem as well, which is really, really awesome.
Yeah, and again, I think the ability to sort of aggregate all this stuff and then throw machine learning at it and come up with alerts and predictive analysis is really where it's going, and that was another big theme from Ignite that I certainly saw with some of the key keynote presentations, that machine learning and the artificial intelligence is really this frontier that's being pushed and enabled via cloud computing and just the pure amount of computing power that people like Microsoft can throw at these sort of problems.
But here's the cool part, right? When you install security and auditing across your workforce, then what comes to you then straight away is the Microsoft's global threat intelligence. And also, too, not only that, they've got their own digital crimes unit, which they know all about IP addresses on the internet. So if any IP addresses are trying to come into your network, whether it be on-prem or in the cloud, straight away within seconds, literally within seconds, you'll know about it. You jump in, you can have a geography map of your environment on-prem and in the cloud, wherever it may be, and you can see orange, which stands for some bad hacker IP address is trying to get into your environment. And then also, too, at the same time, you see red, and red is basically one of your computers which has been compromised, unfortunately, bad luck, going back out to the actor, the bad actor on the internet. So all of that stuff, and it's near real time to reporting and alerting of logging. So it's pretty cool.
So again, get into the OMS stuff if you haven't. There's a free tier, as you mentioned. You can certainly start doing it on workstations, so Windows machines as well as servers, plus things like Office 365 as well. So again, plenty. We'll put some information about that in our show notes. But I think we've probably waffled on enough initially, Mark.
Speaking of waffles, I was going to say that waffle thing you mentioned before about the new waffle that's come out for Office 365. You call it a waffle. I've heard it called about 10 other things, but waffle is one of them. And it's quite interesting because I call it a waffle, and out of 10 things, you call it a waffle as well. So anyway, we both call it the same thing, which is good.
Well, why don't we rename the podcast to the Need to Waffle podcast?
Sounds good. Actually, you mentioned machine learning before, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, guess who we're talking to right now on episode 115?
You better introduce him for us.
Mr. Angry Koala. Hey, Grant.
Hey. It's a nice and bright and early here.
Yes, but the people listening to the podcast could be listening very, very late at night.
Fair enough.
Also got Rob on the line as well, on the other side of the mic.
We can hear the wildlife in the background there at your nature park, so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Do you live on a nature park?
I've got 8 acres in Arcadia. I'm not actually there right this second. I'm actually with my daughter on the Sunshine Coast. So, but yes, the nice thing about technology, of course, is a lot of the time you can work from home. So
you're a Queenslander.
No, daughter moved away from us.
Oh, okay. He's just visiting.
Visiting for her birthday, yeah.
Okay, cool. I won't hold that against you. I'm a Queenslander as well. It's a nice, nice part of the world. Very nice part. So I guess we'll kick off with introductions. And we all know who Robert Crane is. He's MVP for Microsoft. And everyone knows who I am by now. And the only other person there is the person that we're speaking to, Grant Paisley, MVP, another MVP for Microsoft. Do you want to give people an intro to who you are, what you do, all that sort of stuff?
Sure. I'm Data Platform MVP. You'll notice that used to be called a SQL MVP. It's now Data Platform. And I guess that's what we'll be talking about today is why the name has changed. Run a consulting company called Angry Koala based out of Sydney. Been doing BI stuff for a long time. But also I do a lot of things outside of technology, including snow kiting, kite surfing, what else do I get up to? Trials, motorbike riding. Basically enjoy both what I do from a technology point of view and stuff outside there. So it's good.
Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, let's get into it. So thanks for coming on. Rob, do you want to kick off with the first question?
Yeah, so I think that what our listeners like to firstly get from Grant is, I suppose, a bit of a background, a bit of an understanding of what this business intelligence tool that Microsoft has made available for free, so Power BI, which we find at powerbi.com. Give us some idea, Grant, of exactly the role that this sort of tool and also other tools that are available in that sort of suite, what can they do for a business? What sort of role can they perform and how can they solve some business problems for people?
Sure. So as you mentioned, Power BI is a free tool from Microsoft. It's Power BI Desktop. It's a download. And once you download it, you install it. And where Microsoft can make, does make money down the track, I guess, is when you want to publish that into Power BI portal. And that's when you want to share it. And at that point, there's a cost involved with that, a monthly cost. But you always have a free version for yourself. So where does it fit in? Well, nearly everybody, there's people in the organization that are already playing with data. And basically, what's happened with Power BI is it's made up of several components, three really. One is where you grab the data and manipulate it. The second is once that data is manipulated, that's called Power Query, uses an underlying language called M. Not that you have to worry about that because it's all a GUI interface, you just click on things and away you go. And basically, when that pulls it into the environment, it's pulled into a model, and I'll talk a little bit about what that model is and how it works in a second. And the third thing is some visualizations, which are on top of that model. And what it's actually pretty exciting. I'm doing some work for New South Wales Police at the moment, and literally they've been mucking around, I don't know, for months doing these sort of things. And in 3 days, basically, I put together a lot of the stuff that they want to do. and using that as a prototype for building a bigger system. But I guess what's really exciting from my point of view is that it's the stories that are involved with that. Like there was two a guy and a girl in the team there. The guy's already got a background in machine learning and a little bit of R and things like that. And basically, every time I look over at their desk, they're playing with Power BI. They're just, they just picked it up. They've run with it. He's even added some R scripts for doing correlation as they bring the data in. They're learning very, very quickly. And that's just so from a business point of view, you can get at data very, very quickly throughout the relationships, and basically create your dashboards or explore the data. And for the more sophisticated users that already know maybe R, which is integrated now into Power BI, you can do some even more sophisticated things like predictions and that sort of thing.
So would we say that you have to be a bit of an Excel wonk? Do you actually have to understand that sort of side of the analysis, or can we just launch straight into Power BI, do you think?
Look, it's still got to be people that enjoy playing with data. So, personally, I think literally anybody could do it, but I think it's more the fact that some people are predisposed to like playing with data. The other story I give is that I've got three children, and they're sort of grown up now. As you know, Megan lives in Queensland here, and Leisha and Zoe are studying agriculture at Sydney University. And they got some data the other day from one of the research projects on wheat, different strains of wheat, and how effective they were at growing in different environments. Actually, 60 different locations, and I haven't been popular with them since they're about 8, I think. But anyway, so we sat down with Power BI, took that data, threw it into the model. But even better, we're able to, using the same tool, get data directly from the website from Bureau of Meteorology, bring all of that in, and from that they're scraped, I think, the temperature and the rainfall, minimum maximum temperature and the rainfall over the last, 20 years or something, pulled it all into the model. The girls added their own calculations, like, if it's more than, 30 degrees, then it's hot, or, more than this much rain, then it's wet and things like that. And basically, threw all that together, they built. I didn't touch any of the visualizations. They did all that themselves. I gave them a bit of a hand when we were doing the initial stuff. But, they threw it all together, did all the graphs, worked out what strain of wheat is likely to be the best in this new location, and then just sent a link to the lady that sent them the original results, and she was, blown away. So, so the two good things out of that one is, I guess the lady was blown away and I was popular with the girls again. So,
excellent. Yes.
It's a pretty cool tool.
So, speaking of stories, I saw you present last Saturday at Innovation Days. I must say, you are a very good presenter, very seasoned presenter. I loved your presentation style. It definitely got your point across to me as a person sitting in the audience. So, you've got that down pat. But also, too, you talked about another story, quite a funny story, which made me laugh and quite a few of the other people laugh. You are doing the work for the New South Wales Police, but what's that story that you, if you want to tell the people about when the police make a phone call and on a block number?
Basically it's an HR system. So, the data's actually fairly standard, except some of the fields are a little bit different. And so obviously we're talking about incidents here, things that have gone wrong, which happens in any organisation. But in terms of the sort of risky things, I guess, that happen, particularly in the police, there's a few extra fields. And one of them was called tactical option. And what the hell is a tactical option? Anyway, you look at it and it's what else that was used, whether it was a gun or a taser or other things which aren't normally in a normal HR notification report. So that was pretty funny.
And the other story, when you get a block number call from the police and saying, hello, Brad, this is Sergeant such and such from the New South Wales Police. And what was your reaction when you got that phone call?
Well, the trouble is, for anyone that has block calls, the only time you ever get a block call is when it's somebody trying to sell you something. So you're not often that friendly. You're sort of pretty wary. It's only my mum, and now it turns out, of course, the police have blocked calls.
What have I done? What have I done?
Yeah, that's right. It's because, and they're like, this is New South Wales police. And they go, no, I didn't do it. Oh, that's right. No, it's all right. You're my client. something a bit different.
So the other one, I'll just quickly ask. Is the data, I think it was you that was telling us about it, was something coming up big in Australia. The biggest or the most amount of data ever going to be collected, and Western Australia is part of this. It's a global thing.
Ah, no, I didn't say anything about that. So you'll have to
sprung. Okay.
Sprung, that's okay.
I was going to ask you, because I heard it somewhere where, apparently, I can't remember where I heard it, but there was somewhere in the world, Western Australia was joining forces with everybody else. It's something to do with NASA, probably, or collecting data.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say. It's a very good friend of mine, actually next door neighbour to where I grew up in North Epping, built the first solar car for Dick Smith. And he works for CSIRO, and he's working on what I'd say is definitely the thing you're talking about, which is the array of telescopes in Western Australia. So they have, I think, about 36 of these giant telescopes in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally in the middle of nowhere. And it's a really interesting situation. Each telescope is... every single telescope is a different distance from another telescope. So it's purposely exactly random. And he's been over there setting all of that up. All the telescopes are running. He's just finished doing the the power system. They've got a huge power array now, all solar driven. And, yeah, the data that those telescopes are generating is absolutely insane. So I'd say that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I reckon so.
Yeah, and they're hooking that up to, obviously, other places. One of the things that came out of that recently was there's a discovery about relativity, which is one of the last things they proved in it. And what they discovered was that when two black holes bump into each other, they create a gravity wave, but nobody's been able to discover this gravity wave. Anyway, the people that discovered it, some in the US, which is a bit of a freak to actually discover it because you have to be looking at the right part of the sky and everything, found it, I think, about a year and a half ago, but they didn't want to publish it until they were sure. And again, they used the telescopes in Western Australia to confirm what was going on, and they were able to confirm it. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting times.
Excellent. All right. Now, moving back to the boring stuff about talking about Power BI and its connection with Microsoft.
Yes.
We seem so rudimentary now in our little blue planet here. The reality seems to be that Microsoft is integrating this, or it's focusing a lot of its attention now and technology on things like machine learning and this analytics. So we're seeing analytics in things like OMS with the log searches, with the security, but also Microsoft now have these products like Delve and their paid version, which is the Cortana Analytics, which is pulling all these data, and then we're using tools like Power BI to analyze that. I mean, is this a trend you've been seeing with Microsoft? Is this sort of the direction that you see them taking with the product?
Absolutely. And again, to talk a little bit about from a human aspect of what's going on, the Power BI, remember I mentioned I was going to talk about the model itself. The model is called, under the covers, is also known as a tabular analysis services model, and it was built by the analysis services team at Microsoft. Now, what happened, I think about 5 years ago or something, the whole team moved across and built a brand new engine. So the standard engine is something called now multidimensional, and you may have heard of that, or it's analysis services multidimensional. So this new environment is based on something called tabular. Now, that physical engine is inside of Excel as Power BI, and it's inside of Power BI Desktop. And so the team ran away, and they were all very excited. They built this brand new environment, and it's now inside, as I said, Excel and Power BI Desktop. Originally, it was part of Excel. That sort of that didn't work terribly well because they were all caught. Sorry, it was part of SharePoint, which made it very difficult to deploy and things like that. So what happened was more recently, I forget the name of the guy in charge, but basically he's an ex startup company sort of guy. So he's come into Microsoft and he's just. They're running now because effectively they're broken away and they're now completely independent. They rev the portal every week. Every month they release new features in the Power BI Desktop, and those using Power BI Desktop will see that. And it's like releasing all the energy and all the excitement at Microsoft because they've got some very smart guys at Microsoft, of course, and now they've been released and they can actually do things without being caught up with all the red tape. And they just
power away. With Office 365.
Yeah, well, with everything. Yeah. It's just like, and now this thing is independent. It now is linking into other things. So, for instance, IoT, Internet of Things devices. You can use Event Hubs, bring all the data through that, and plug it straight into Power BI. Power BI will hook into existing things like Google Analytics, even like all of these out of the box. You just a few clicks and you're up and running with this environment. So. And the other thing I'd like to say is that where Microsoft, I think, has the edge in a lot of places is they've fully embraced the open source stuff. So in Power BI Desktop, you can import or even build, if you like, if you're clever enough, your own visualizations. And it uses something called D3. If you ever go to the D3 website and have a look at the amazing visualizations that happen there, that's the technology they're doing. And they've completely thrown open the code. You can look at their code for building a graph or something like that and modify it to how you want it and use it and deploy it using these used visualizations. So Microsoft is actually getting this open source up and running. And it's the same in the whole Azure environment. They don't care if you're
in PowerShell.
They don't care what you're running. They can be Linux or whatever. So, we're seeing some very, very interesting developments. So there's a combination of things. One is Microsoft developers themselves being released and able to really go to town on building these things. Two, they are doing this stuff in the cloud first, so they can rev this stuff very quickly without having to worry about on-premise and all of those sort of things. So we're just seeing, it's a renaissance of this whole area. Just fantastic. And then I haven't even spoken about the machine learning part of it, which is also in the cloud.
Well, that's coming up shortly because we've got a list of stuff here. So Cortana Analytics is the other thing that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, Cortana Analytics is sort of like it's a bit of a marketing term which takes into account the portal aspect of Power BI plus data lake and basically all the things to do with data and moving data around and displaying data from a cloud point of view. It's really it's called like a Cortana suite.
When people see it on the computer with Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, it's a circle down the bottom. Or when they set up Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, it says, would you like to use Cortana? And you could skip that, but a lot of people don't really sort of, the normal folk out there don't really understand exactly what Cortana is. Like my sister and my brother-in-law were setting up a new computer the other day, and they said, oh, what's Cortana? It's like, we don't want to use Cortana. Cortana is not going to be worth anything for us or going to do anything or create any value. Whereas we all know that Cortana is a great search engine for Windows, and I use it to find lots of things and to help to me to remember things, to buy things, and all sorts of stuff. It pops up with little tips and stuff. So just call it.
So the Cortana is the that front end bit which is interfacing to all these lovely back end technologies. And as you rightly point out, you can say things like, oh, when I'm at the shop, remind me to buy 3 loaves of bread, and it knows when you go to the shop, so it reminds you. So what's happening in the background is a whole lot of services that understand contextually and sort of through machine learning, which is learning about things, basically looking for trends and things like that, which you could sort of do yourself, but but it's a lot easier if you use a machine to actually go through all the permutations than manually, like you would in a normal BI tool. Just sort of click on things and look for trends. You can actually tell a machine learning environment, say, okay, tell me whether there's any relationships between X and Y, and I can talk a little bit about that down the track.
Better let Rob ask a question.
That's all right. I mean, I think that there is, not only Microsoft, but obviously a lot of the other providers are going down this path of machine learning, because now that we've got our computers in the cloud that can really generate some horsepower and there's not so much required to do on-prem, a lot of machine learning obviously is now happening in the background and people aren't aware of it. But, I mean, what do you see, again, taking it back to a business context? Can you give us an example of where machine learning could be used by the average small business or the average business we've got today? Where could they actually look at it and say, you know what, I could really get value out of this, or this would really help my business in some way using this thing called machine learning?
Sure. So as we've said, well, first of all, let's talk about ML or machine learning. It's a product you can use. Well, actually, it takes a few places it turns up. R itself, the language, is now built into SQL Server 2016. So if your IT department has that, then you can get somebody to build some R scripts, if you like, to do stuff along the lines of analysis. And all the young guys coming out of uni with any sort of data science all know about R and how to use that. And so the sort of things you can do, for instance, it's something that we've done, and that is you can take all your I took all the data for Angry Koala, for instance, all my accounting data, and I ran it through an algorithm. So what happens with you basically take a whole lot of data, and then you say, okay, I'm going to use 75% of the data to train my machine learning model, if you like. And then I take the last 25% and try and predict whatever it was I was trying to do using the 25%. Then I can compare that to what really happened, and then I can get an accuracy of my model. Does that make sense?
Yep, sort of.
Yeah. Sort of. Okay, well, I'll give you an example, then it'll make sense. So one of the things, for instance, is I took all the data. So what happens every 3 months is I go into my machine, I start doing the data conciliation. And anyway, that's run a business will have done this, or farmed it off. I still do some of it. But effectively, here's a list of bank statements. And I look at that list of bank statements and I click and I go, oh, that's obviously an accounting charge. Oh, that's obviously this. So I'm basically tagging the stuff and putting it into the appropriate account. So what you can use machine learning for instance, is you can pick out all the individual words in your bank account. And based on that, it can predict what account it should go into. So whether it's, accounting or petrol or whatever, travel, entertainment, whatever it happens to be. So I did that, and I got for my data, I think, a 90% accuracy. So 9 out of 10 transactions, it could work out what category it should go into. Now, there's a couple of aspects to this which has turned out interesting when you looked at my data, and that is, it was quite accurate, but the things that it got that it couldn't work out, I couldn't work out. I'd have to go back and look in PayPal or something to work out exactly what it was, because even I couldn't tell just by looking at the words. That was the first thing. But the other thing is, it actually did better than I did, because, for instance, one of the transactions I had put in as petrol was actually $500, which I don't really have a car that'll take $500 worth of petrol. But also it had the words Vodafone in it, and I'd put it as petrol. And the reason I put it as petrol is also in amongst that was the letters B and P. And the way I would load the stuff was I'd just do a wildcard. I go BP, anything with BP, and this great long list of petrol things would come up. And I go select all, petrol. So it's interesting. So in that respect, the machine learning is very good at looking at patterns and showing things that are outside of the pattern. So another example, a really good example for those developers out there, is instead of when you're doing an app, actually building every sort of check for all the fields and what you can and can't do, you just basically use machine learning to see what overall makes sense. And then you, the person will just actually, okay, here's everything I filled in. So I'm 84 years old and I'm hiring a, I want to insure a WRX and blah, 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 blah. Well, it's going to pop up and say, hang on, this is a little bit unusual. Or I put in there, say I'm 150 years old, and it'll pop up and say, well, hang on, I haven't really seen anybody that's 150 years old or this particular combination. And it can pop up and warn them and say, well, this is a bit unusual. Now, if it's true, which is could be, maybe you've been regenerated three times, then you go, yeah, okay, that's true. But it means from a coding point of view, you don't have to code every single thing, and you can just let the machine learn about what's normal and what's not normal. So, yeah.
It's interesting because you mentioned code, and I do a lot of PowerShell. Machine learning could potentially, you could give it and train it how to do like the 75% number that you mentioned before. You could probably train it how to do coding, and it would basically predict the other 25%. So do you think machine learning would be able to do coding for people in the future?
I don't know.
I stumped you.
Well, certainly. Oh, you have a little bit, but thinking about it, if you just step back a bit, and I do this a lot with clients when they give me, oh, I want this report, and it looks exactly like this, and I go, yeah, it's a lovely report, but can you tell me what you actually want to use it for? And that's the difference. From a business point of view, what are you going to do with that report? What decisions are you going to make? And what makes me think, well, this question is, instead of thinking about it as code, it's just what are you trying to do, get that code to do? What's the, from a business point of view or whatever, what are you trying to do with that code? So in that respect, I think, yes, you could probably, you could get the machine learning to learn to do stuff.
That's scary. Sure that's so we're going to do each other out of a job in 10 years' time. Like, we've gone from IT pro to DevOps to developer, and then even devs are going to be out of a job soon. So I think it's a good time to be that bricklayer that we're talking about, because there is a shortage of bricklayers out there.
I think where the excitement is and I see this all the time, and it's where Power BI desktop and things like that really fit in, is so much time has been spent by everybody grabbing data every month, making all the manipulations, doing this, doing that, and they're spending so much time just preparing data. They don't get any time for the analysis side of things and the value add. And you know, and that's just depressing from a business point of view. Why do you want to be doing that? So, I guess what I see is more the fact that we can do more higher level add stuff without doing the mundane things as much. Is where I see the
except,
world sort of
except
going.
For you won't be out of a job anytime soon. People like you. So we better start to wrap things up. Sure. Rob, have you got any other questions you want to sort of shoot?
Yeah, I think probably the topic a lot of people haven't really gone into, had a look at in any great depth. I mean, where would you suggest that people go and have a bit of an understanding of what we're talking about, or having a play with these tools? How can they actually get involved and start understanding, you know, things like what Microsoft's creating and, you know, machine learning and the analysis? What's the best way for them to actually get started in this arena?
Well, definitely the PowerBI.com website. If you just jump on there, you can literally put in your live ID and click on a button and it's downloaded. In fact, I think in the demo I did, I did the demo the other night, and I left my laptop at home, which was pretty impressive. So I had to borrow somebody's laptop and do the whole demonstration. And it had the wrong version of Power BI on it, and literally in front of the audience, I downloaded a new version, got it up and running. So the main thing is just get it down and play with it. There's lots of very cool information there. There's lots of basically people around the world that give you hints and tips and things. And the machine learning is the same. If you put in Azure machine learning, there's a gallery of already existing machine learning algorithms and things, and you can click on one of the algorithms. It'll actually start up a studio for you to actually play with that, and away you go. But certainly I think the machine learning is more more of a power user environment. But certainly the Power BI desktop, anybody should be able to pick that up. I used it to work out what skis to buy for snow kiting. I grabbed all the data about all these skis and worked out, you know, what width and versus weight and all that sort of stuff. You know, I use it for everything, man.
Cool. Yeah, I'm sorry, just quickly, the other thing I would point people to is that Power BI has its own YouTube channel as well, and it has some fantastic training videos there to get you up to speed really quickly. So they've got some really good tutorials also on the Power BI site, but they also have their own Power BI channel, which has some, you know, great stuff in there and really makes it easy to get started. So I think that's another great resource as well.
So yeah. with the machine learning part, have you done any videos or any demonstrations like webinars with machine learning?
I personally have not, but there's lots of things out there, so it's due normal searches.
Is it like what Rob was saying, Power BI has got its own YouTube channel? Does machine learning have it have a similar thing, or
I'm not aware of a YouTube channel along there. No, so I think, the main claim to fame is I guess the having the gallery, which is both things from Microsoft and other organisations that you use, download and use.
Guess you started.
So what I say, again, I'll point people to, I think what's a good resource is obviously the Microsoft Virtual Academy. That's got a lot of good stuff on Azure.
Good point.
And if memory serves me correctly, it also has some modules on machine learning specifically around Azure. So again, they're the two resources I'd certainly refer people to, the Microsoft Virtual Academy along with the specific YouTube channels. So Microsoft has YouTube channels for Office 365, Power BI, Azure and so on, so they're great resources. Microsoft Mechanics, another great YouTube channel. So there's plenty of stuff out there, and we'll put some of this in the show notes and help people find the right.
That'd be awesome.
Also, too, don't forget, by the time that you're listening or the listeners are listening to this, it's probably, or this is if they are listening to it, because they're probably like watching reruns or watching Ignite in the US, because Ignite in the US is next week.
Yes.
Or it's probably, or this week if you're listening to it at whatever time. But machine learning and Power BI demonstrations and all that sort of stuff will be definitely run out of Ignite in the US in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's another good resource as well.
So just the final comment on the machine learning. I expect to see a lot of fantastic things happening over the next year. Jamie McLaren is an old friend of mine that started the original data mining at Microsoft probably about 10 years ago. And he's now starting up. He's come back to Microsoft. He was in a data mining startup, and he's going to bring a lot of the things that they've been doing there into the Microsoft environment. So stay tuned.
That makes me even more scared. I've got to upskill even more so.
You need more languages, mate.
More languages.
Very cool.
All right. Excellent.
All right, well, it sounds as though we better start rounding it up. So what we might do, Mark, is get Grant to let people know how they can get in contact with him if they want to get further information about the topics we've discussed. So, Grant, you can do that. But the other additional thing I'll get you to do is just explain to people your company name as well in a little bit more detail, so they do appreciate that it is actually a company name and not the name of some sort of strange organization out there on the internet collecting.
That's right. So, all right. So, as I mentioned earlier, my company name, which is a very formal business analytics company that does a lot of work for large organizations and banks and things, is called Angry Koala. The reason it's called Angry Koala is so that you remember. In fact, that part works extremely well. Did a bit of research into naming, and if you can picture something, then it sticks in people's minds a lot. And, of course, Angry Koala, people think of koalas as friendly, and so it's the opposite of what you expect. So the combination of those two things. And in fact, the negative part of the name I didn't really come across until I went to a company site called Igor International, which I also remember because Igor, being the guy with a hump on his back, is also a very negative name. So Igor International Branding, if you want to do anything to do with names, go and have a look at their website. They can fill out some things and have a look at how they go about naming. So that's where that came from. You can contact me, Grant, G-R-A-N-T, or Grant, if you're American, at angrykoala.com.au, and happy to field any questions or point people in any direction. So it's all good.
So I'm thinking about doing the same thing, maybe setting and going into business for myself. Do you think a business named Friendly Crocodile might be a good place to start?
Friendly Crocodile. There you go. Quite possibly.
Grant.
No one knew what a drop bear was.
So yeah. Yeah, cheers. Thanks very much for coming on this morning. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for your time, guys. Appreciate it.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.